Treat dad to the good stuff at Nordstrom Rack and save big. Father's Day is Sunday, June 16th, and Nordstrom Rack's got gifts dad will love, up to 60% off. Shirts, activewear, watches, cologne, denim, and more. Find amazing deals on Tommy Bahama, Cole Haan, Original Penguin, and Vince. Great brands, great prices. So get to your Nordstrom Rack store now and make dad's day with gifts up to 60% off.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
This is Off Track with Hinch and Rossi.
So you're not feeling well, Tim? Who gave you COVID?
I caught a real bad case of the consequences of my own actions.
You caught what everyone's gonna get, and it's okay. It's no longer leprosy.
I'm fine. I don't care. Like, actually, what's funny is I was talking about this with somebody else because I, as Alex loves to point out, I got COVID because he thinks I talk about it too much. I got back here, and when I left, probably 10 or 20% of my friend group in LA had had COVID. And in the course of me being gone for 3 weeks, it's now 100%. It's now everybody I know has it or just got it in the last 3 weeks.
You are like one of two people that I know in kind of my immediate group that had somehow managed to avoid it this entire 2 years. And yeah. Both of you in the last week have now got it.
Yeah, I feel like I did a good job. I've made it over 2 years. It'd be like Hall of Fame Frogger, you know.
It's one way of looking at it. All right, guys, hello and welcome to another episode of Off Track with
know one person that hasn't had it allegedly is Connor.
That's because it can't get through any of the other stuff in Connor,
right?
There's yes. So many different bacteria viruses that have laid claim
fighting it off. Yeah.
Connor started talking a lot of shit on his podcast, which may be fine because I guess we've said some things about him, but I find it interesting.
You mean when he talked about passing you in the Indy 500?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Would you like to respond?
Sure. Oh, I mean, actually, yeah, sure. I didn't respond in the group text because I was the better man, but today I'm not feeling like a better man. I'm feeling like a petty, petty little child.
Okay, so let's
this is my favorite, Alex.
Let's set the stage a little bit here. For those that don't remember, what lap did you get by him on? I don't remember.
Like 179 or something.
Okay.
Like,
so for like most of the last stint, you ran ahead of Connor in the 500. You guys finished fifth and sixth. And on his podcast, Speed Street. Thank you. We did a live show with them in May with Joey Molinaro and Connor Daly. Connor apparently this week claimed that if he had had one more lap, he would have passed Alex back for fifth place. And Alex would now like to respond.
Well, sorry, I'm too excited. I can't.
So where this first response comes from is we all had dinner, and some of our Connor and I's mutual friends were kind of poking fun at him, be like, "Oh, why'd you let Alex pass?" Blah, 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 ha ha ha, and he didn't like that very much because obviously he didn't like we're all trying our best to beat everyone, like
let anyone pass, correct?
Yeah, no one let. Oh, hey buddy, go on through. Like, come on,
you've earned it,
right? And so. Connor's response was, "Oh, well, my spotter told me he was a lap down." It's like, okay, no. So my response was, "Oh, so did your spotter finally tell you that I was on the lead lap?" So that was response number one.
Because his claim that he would have passed him one more lap. Why are you trying to pass a lap car if that's he went by in the first
place? What happened to the other 20 laps?
You also don't let lap cars pass you. Like, that's not a thing.
Right.
So even if you were a lap down, you'd probably fight harder almost to keep him by.
I feel like we can also check this, right? I mean, everybody's on boards. We can go through and see what his spotter said.
That sounds like an awful
lot. That's a lot of research.
I'm not going to do it. Yeah, I just want to say theoretically you could. Maybe.
I'm not going to use the other one. My other response was, oh, were you going to like go flat for the 502nd mile? Because cool.
I mean, you did. I mean, in his defense on that, you said about Detroit, if you had one more lap, it would have been interesting.
Yeah, I never claimed that I would beat him. I just said it would have been interesting.
Fair enough.
There was also a situation where it went from a 17 and a half second gap to a 1 second gap, where I feel like that sort of closure was not
a consistent like 8-tenth gap for 20 laps. But yes, anyways, it's neither here nor there. I would love it, actually, since we're two rival IndyCar podcasts that are friends. We should have kind of rebuttals on each other's shows weekly and see how many people flip-flop between the shows to see what happens next. I think that's kind of...
I don't even think we're frenemies. I think we're just friends. Yeah. We're just friends that are really to each other.
Well, that's what good friends are.
That's
what you think about. Yeah,
that's
your
true.
Best
that's
friends
true.
Are like that. I mean...
So anyways, Detroit. Man, I'm going to miss Belle Isle, man.
Oh, man, I know. Like,
I get,
are we opening
I get
with
why
this?
Yeah.
All
why
right,
not?
Let's do it.
I get why.
Okay.
We're
why?
Leaving. Well, because with a couple of reasons. Number one, I think a lot of the community that is in charge of Belle Isle from a
conservationist standpoint.
Yes. And the love of nature and squirrels and birds, which I also do love. Mm-hmm. I get it. I get their argument. However, Penske Corp and Roger and Bud Dankers, their response was, well, we're pouring tens of millions of dollars into this facility to make it the sanctuary that it is. So any damage that we're potentially doing over a 3-day event once a year,
probably offset by that.
Correct. The second big thing, aside from kind of just that bit of pushback that I'm sure they have to deal with each year, was parking and getting to the event as it is on an island was very, very, very challenging.
Yes. Ingress and egress for fans has always been a challenge there. And we'll have to watch the bus lines of, you know, the lineup of coaches that are bringing people back across the island to the parking lots that are on the mainland. For sure. I definitely understand the logistic issues there. And let's be honest, man, anytime you bring a race closer to the people, it's usually a good thing. The negative, though, is the track layout at Belle Isle is so fantastically unique for a temporary circuit that I think drivers are just going to miss that character that Belle Isle really brought, I think, to the series.
I don't even know if character's the right word. I think what's so cool about it is it's concrete. And it's almost immune to all of the negatives that come along with condition changes. You know, it's just infinitely more grip the more time, the more laps that go down on it. You know, it doesn't have oils in it. It doesn't. There's not that micro roughness that you're dealing with like you do on asphalt. You know, from a cold day to a hot day, like. The track's the same. It's just, you know, you might have a bit more grip or power because it's cooler, right? You never get to the point where the track kind of goes to and I think that's the best part of it. And I kind of realized that over the weekend. It's like, it doesn't really matter that, you know, Friday is hot and Saturday morning or Saturday qualifying is going to be cold. Track's still going to be pretty much the same and just get exponentially quicker. And there's a lot of high-speed corners.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, you can't deny that from a layout standpoint, like a corner geometry standpoint. Like, turn one and two just have to be the two fastest corners on any street circuit that we've ever been to. Like, it's crazy. Since they had to, like, neuter the final sector of Toronto, it's been, that the elevation, the jump in turn two.
Yeah.
Like the elevation.
It's also weird it races so well. Why do you think that is?
Because of the tires. I think the only reason it races well is because the massive deg that we saw on the tires, which we will get into. But
right.
Yeah, all in all, you know, it was a cool scenic track from a racing standpoint. It was always good from a just to drive it. The pure, you know, once you got into that rhythm, once the rubber went down and the track kept getting better throughout the weekend, it just got more and more fun to drive. And when you look at, and look, I think we have to reserve judgment until we get race cars on the new layout. But like on paper, when you look at the new layout, not the most inspiring design.
That's one really long straight.
It's just a bunch of 90 degree corners. It's a very yeah. point and squirt kind of typical old school street circuit in that sense. And it's really in a lot of ways, the polar opposite of Belle Isle. Belle Isle had these fast, you know, less than 90, more than 90, you know, all these sort of different kinds of corners, which, you know, a lot more of a road coursey sort of shape, but
yeah,
the new Detroit is,
it might be okay, right? We gotta wait. Like, because yeah. I think if you look at Nashville on paper, you'd think, oh, that's probably gonna be pretty good. And then you get there and you're like, oh.
It had good parts and bad parts. Yeah.
What do you guys think about the split pit?
I only realized this morning when James and I were at the gym and he showed it to me. I mean, hats off to IndyCar. That's a hell of a creative idea to solve a problem.
Yeah.
And I think it'll definitely be the first time that it's happened in racing. And I think it's awesome. I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, I concur. I think having to solve that problem to begin with was a huge challenge, but the way they dreamed up a solution, I think is great. And I'm excited to see kind of how it works out on the weekend. But yeah, I mean, like Alex said, kudos to IndyCar and the people at Detroit for sorting that one out.
Should be fun. Let's. I mean, ultimately, yes, it's sad to lose Belle Isle, but we're not losing an event. If
correct.
Anything, we're getting a what in theory should be a bigger event, right?
Yeah.
So, all in all, it's a good thing for the trajectory of the series. So it's not all sad. It's just from the purest perspective of driving the track. You're
it's an emotional thing. It's not right. really like a
logical thing. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. It's heart, not head. So yes, we look forward to new Detroit. We've put a bow now on our time on Belle Isle, at least for now. And Will Power won the race.
Put a bow on it with his bow tie.
He sure did with his Chevrolet bow tie. 100th win in the modern era for Chevrolet since the new engine formula came out in 2012.
Wow.
And an exciting race, man. It really was. So, Alex, you were very much front and center for it. Why don't you walk us through your day?
Yeah, I mean, our...
So qualifying. Let's start in qualifying.
Well, that's where I was going to begin. So our day became what it was because qualifying, you know, I think we've shown in the past, you know, the Andretti cars and us specifically are usually very, very strong at Detroit. We rolled off Friday strong, happy, led practice 2 Saturday morning. Didn't really have to chase anything. You know, we just kind of continued the progression through the weekend and, you know, round one of qualifying was a non-issue and round two of qualifying. I, along with a lot of others, I was not the only one caught out by this, was burned by Grosjean's crash, which brought out a red flag. And there was, I think, like 5 cars that were projecting to transfer.
Yeah. Can I jump in on that yes. point? Because this was really fascinating to watch because 3 drivers had already come into the pits, right? Essentially, their runs were done. One of them was Joseph Newgarden, who was sitting 6th in pit lane, okay? Nothing he can do at this point. Checkered flag is out. There were 6 cars on track that were projecting to transfer, and they were 7 through 12 on the current list. So basically, he was sitting 6th, and every car behind him in the order was projecting to bump in to the next qualifying segment. And he just was sort of sitting there helpless. And then Grosjean was one of the first to the end of the lap, has his accident, everyone's laps go. So I don't want to say it wasn't lucky that he got in. You know, he did what he had to do. He went early enough that he avoided the red flag. That's not luck. That's a decision. But yeah, that could have gone really differently for a Joseph. Very likely would not have been in Q3 had it not been for that.
Well, what's amazing is like not only there. Yes, you're right. He did the lap. He did it on time. still got a little lucky.
Yeah.
But then the fact that, you know, he was staring at a screen, like on his tablet, probably for like 25, 30 seconds thinking, I'm going to be 10th, 11th.
Yeah. Here.
And then fast forward 10 minutes and he's on pole. And yeah. It's just, that is what's awesome and so effing infuriating about IndyCar.
Right.
Because like there are so many people, every single outing, right, that are just, that can actually go do the lap, right? And I think we saw that even more in Detroit. You know, the coin cars did an amazing job. Both Shank cars were representing. I mean, that's legitimately, there was 12 cars of the fast 12. All 12 of those cars, if things fell their way, they could have been on pole, right? And it just so happened that, yes, Joseph got a little lucky. He did a great job in the fast six. That was a mega lap, yada, yada, yada. But it's just, that's the nature of the sport. So anyways, I was very angry Saturday evening because I got to be straight with y'all. Like, this was the second qualifying in, well, keep in mind that two of the qualifying we've had were ovals. So two qualifying in four races where a Grosjean red flag severely hurt our ability to start higher. Be that as it may, we were happy that we had a fast car. We knew we had a fast car. So the easiest way in our minds that we thought to execute that was to get in clean air. I still had it very fresh. I still have it very fresh in my mind. 2018, race two at Detroit, when I started on pole and my teammate Ryan Hunter Ray started 11th. And he opted for the three stop. I opted for the two stop. And he hunted me down in the final kind of 7-8 laps, went on to win the race. So,
and
a little
and
bit of it.
Even more recently, the exact same thing happened last year in race two, where Pato Award committed to the three stop.
Yes.
Joseph Newgarden was on the two stop and Pato passed Joseph with three laps to go or something.
Different circumstances. Yes. But yeah, ultimately, yes. Same concept. So for me, that was the clear decision. And also I was just so fired up and upset still about Saturday that I just wanted to go out there and
hammer
sweat
it
and work hard and just hammer laps, right?
Because the big option, the big decision to be made in Detroit was the two-stop or the three-stop. So the two-stop, very easy to make on fuel, which is usually the struggle when deciding between the two and three-stoppers. Can you hit the number? Might need to rely on a bit of yellow, whatever. For one of the very rare instances, what really was dictating the two or three-stopper was tire life. The alternates, the reds, they were very difficult to make last a full fuel stint to make that two-stopper work. And so there was a great mix of drivers kind of committing to the two and the three right from the get-go. Alex was one of the first to say, "Now I want to run 10 tenths all day, start on the reds, pit on lap, what, five, four?
Four, yeah.
And all right, my red tire allocation requirements done, throw on some primaries and let's just go for broke." And dude, that first stint, you were on fire. It was so much fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I was very angry. I was still very, very, very upset. So anyways, the team, you know, 2 weeks in a row, 2 weeks on the trot, executed in a big way all day. So hats off to them. And I think we're in a good place for whatever reason right now. So that's awesome. You know, you love having back-to-back-to-back weekends like this when things are going well. So we'll take that and go to Road America. And I was talking to my engineer about it. It would be very cool. And I hope I'm going to do my best to make this happen. But I think it would be very, very cool if we could hopefully win this weekend, right? And bring this whole storm over the past 3 years kind of full circle and just like bookend it, right? Starting and ending at Road America would be pretty neat. So that's a little bit of extra motivation for me this weekend. And yes, other than that, the race. I've gotten asked quite a few times about the last stint. You know, we had a 20-second kind of gap to close down to Will, who was on the reds. I was on the blacks. We knew that, you know, for the beginning, he was going to be the same, if not a little bit better, but then eventually it would come back to us. And, you know, the topic of lap traffic has come up and about whether or not that affected us. And guys, I'm going to be honest, like it didn't. Like, so for the first time, I'm going to say, like, legitimately the lap cars, for the most part, I would say about five out of the six that I came across were very respectful, didn't interfere, got out of the way, and it was not a big deal. So that was refreshing because we've talked about that and touched on that in the past. Like, what are you doing fighting for nothing, right?
Right.
And using overtake to try and who knows why. So it wasn't that. I think Will did an amazing job. Like, I know I couldn't have done 20 laps on the reds. No one really
at that
did
pace. Yeah.
At that pace. So what he accomplished is awesome. And ultimately he deserved it because he was able to pull off something that no one else did. So that's frustrating to say, but it's reality.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we were talking about that. I mean, Will does have a history of being able to make tires last longer than others. I mean, I think back, I forget what year it was. There was one year at the Indy GP where, again, maybe it was the blacks were the bad tire. I forget which one it was, but one of them was exceptionally bad. And he was just able to absolutely cruise away from everyone in that bad stint. And at the, after warm up, you know, we were talking in the NBC truck and the pre-production meeting about, all right, like who do we think's doing what? And I was like, well, two guys I can almost promise you are going to try the two stopper are Will and Dixon. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, Dixon also was phenomenal at that and just controlling the pace. But the big difference between them was Dixon used his alternates in the middle stint where Will waited to the end, built up a huge, I mean, he started 16th. He drove through an incredible number of cars, including Scott actually at one point early on. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Alex, as the rubber goes down, that track just gets better and better and better. More rubber means it's going to take care of those red tires a little bit better. So that was kind of Penske's strategic move. Had there been a caution late in the race, that's not the right move. And that's kind of what burned Joseph last year. But because you kind of have the worst tire when everybody's all packed up. After a weekend of a lot of cautions and a lot of red flags and practice and qualifying, we ran, I think, the first ever totally green race at Detroit, which is crazy.
It doesn't surprise me, though. Like, every time, like, it takes me back to, I think it was Mid-Ohio 2020, yes.
Oh,
right?
Or 19. Before that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like we couldn't do 3 minutes without a yellow or a red, right? All for 2 days, right? And then the race goes green.
Yeah, you're like, this race is going to be a disaster, and then everyone just gets their stuff together and full
green. It's almost the events. It's like we talked about leading into Indy, right? People are getting away with shit.
Yeah,
they're not in the race. Like it's almost like you're going to have one or the other.
Yeah, we made up for the calm month with a kind of hectic race from a single car incident standpoint, but
yeah. But anyways, so good job to Will and Penske. Good job to my guys. Again, like I said, good effort. And yeah.
Treat dad to the good stuff at Nordstrom Rack and save big. Father's Day is Sunday, June 16th, and Nordstrom Rack's got gifts dad will love, up to 60% off. Shirts, activewear, watches, cologne, denim, and more. Find amazing deals on Tommy Bahama, Cole Haan, Original Penguin, and Vince. Great brands, great prices. So get to your Nordstrom Rack store now and make Dad's Day with gifts up to 60% off.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tim does look a little like ghostly.
You look a little.
I was just looking at myself. I was like, should my lips have colors?
No, they should. They should. You look very, very twilighty right now.
Yeah, I'm not loving it.
Girls love that though. They love the super pale.
I guess.
I haven't. Well,
werewolf. Anyways, go on.
Yeah.
Yes, James.
What are some other notable drives from that day from Detroit? Who else was
good?
I mean, David Malukas, let's give him a shout out for making the Firestone Fast Six. That's a pretty awesome result. Oh, you know, who I wanted to give a shout out to is actually Christian Lundgaard. So I'm not saying this to anybody. I'm not saying this, you know, I know a lot of people at this organization. I love them all. Great group of people. But man, the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan Racing Group is they're riding the struggle bus hard. They are just, unfortunately, consistently week in and week out, just struggling for pace. You know, I talked to one of the engineers before qualifying and they said, we're struggling. So we've gone three completely different directions in qualifying. They qualified 19th, 20th and 23rd. So none of the directions worked. And normally so far this year, when they've had this problem, Graham does Graham things and just sort of hustles the shit out of the car on race day and pulls off a solid top 10, something like that. Unfortunately, Graham tagged a wall, I think, on the second lap of the race and put himself out. But Christian Lundgaard, again, you know, he's already leading the Rookie of the Year standings, just sort of stayed out of trouble. You know, we know the car didn't necessarily have the pace, but just kind of did his thing, stayed out of trouble. Again, on a day where there wasn't a lot of attrition, there wasn't a lot of cautions, and came home 14th. So that was a pretty decent jump up for him, and credit to him. Kyle Kirkwood, I feel bad for him. He injured his hand in practice in a practice crash after a brake failure. Did the whole IMSA race with, you know, a damaged hand, won the IMSA race with his teammate, Ben Barnicote, and was actually doing a great job for how physical that track is and how tough these cars are to drive around there, but then just made a mistake on an outlap and cranked the wall. And unfortunately that was his day done, but honorable mention to Cal Kirkwood for sure. And that is Detroit in a nutshell, I think.
I have an interesting fan interaction.
Oh yeah. You both did, right?
I don't know. Oh, you mean the the diagram?
Vocal cord thing?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, interesting. So, okay, last episode maybe it was last episode? I don't know.
Yeah, somehow it was post 500. Yeah.
Somehow we got on the topic of, like, you know, being a singer or something is right. Must be very hard, and can you train your throat muscles to, you know,
yeah,
be able to, like, tolerate that abuse and endurance, right? Can you train throat endurance for singing or whatever? And some listener, I don't know your name, but made a diagram.
But we're big fans of you.
Amazing. She came up to me in the autograph session and it was a handmade front and back 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with visuals and explanations about how your throat and your voice box and your vocal cords and everything, how that all works. And it is in fact a muscle, and amazing. So thank you.
Yes.
However, I handed it to one of the PR representatives at Andretti afterwards, and she didn't quite look at the title, but some of the imagery was, I mean, it's the human body, right?
Yeah, it's like anatomy looking.
Right.
Yeah.
So she didn't really look at it, and she was like, what is this? I'm uncomfortable. Am I going to have to report this to HR? And I was like, shut up. She was like, what are you giving me? And I was like, okay, here is it's a throat. It's about your voice. It's not inappropriate. But it kind of scared me for a second.
That you're going to get written up.
This is how it goes. This is how Alex's career goes.
Yeah.
This is how it ends.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, yes, thank you for...
not with a whimper, but with a diagram.
the education on voice stuff. Sorry, one last thing. Felix Rosenquist had to start last after blocking and qualifying and already crashing in the first practice, had a pretty bad weekend, 26th to 10th. Great drive. Great heads up drive from him.
Are you just going to have participation trophies on this podcast now?
Honorable mentions.
Where did Marcus finish?
I think Marcus ended 8th. I think he's kind of ended where he started. He was 7th. So started
as a 500 winner. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's not bad. Yeah. Dude, you have to go all the way back to 2000. Montoya for the last 500 winner who won the following race.
All right. Well, so Detroit in the
probably,
books.
It's, to be honest, it's probably because he didn't do any of the media stuff. He just sat in the corner and played Candy Crush. And so
yeah,
because
they're
pretty rested.
The only other one that's been good in the last decade was Takuma in 2020, because there probably was no media.
Yeah.
Right. So I put an asterisk beside that one. And before that, it was Dario in 2012.
I think he finished on the podium.
Yeah, let's find out. I do have this written down somewhere.
I was like, okay.
Well, you weren't on the podium. I know that.
Well, no. Okay. I mean, I wasn't on the podium in anything in 2016.
Okay.
That doesn't mean it was a bad race.
Too soon.
Okay. Okay. So 2016, you were 10th.
On both days?
It only has one.
Yeah, but I qualified listed. 17th.
I wonder if bad. That was like your best. Yeah, but why'd you qualify so crap? Because you were tired and you were worn out.
No, I mean, Ryan Hunter Ray was 15th. Marco Andretti was 19th. So
you're saying the car wasn't great. So like speaking
of awesome.
Speaking of Hunter Ray, Ryan came on the broadcast with us on Saturday? I think Saturday morning for second practice. He was there in his advisory role with Ganassi and he was sitting around. I was like, hey man, why don't you NBC got him on the broadcast. So we're on the broadcast and we were talking about this kind of May hangover and the challenges of the returning 500 winner in Detroit. And as soon as we started talking about it, he just got this like really angry look on his face. He's like, I know where you're going and I don't like it. And he had a way better clapback. Cause I was like, yeah, Ryan, you know, the challenge of this, I mean, you won the 514, you came back and, you know, had a, by all accounts, a miserable weekend here in Detroit. He was like, yeah,
you
know what?
Hit the ring, a wall every session,
every single session he hit either a tire barrier or a wall. And that's practice qualifying both races. Like it was horrendous weekend for him. Hey, but his clapback was immediately like, yeah, you know, but the ring shines pretty bright. So, that wasn't a criticism. It was just, I remember that weekend and he was so down, man. He was so distraught with how his weekend was going. And I was like, Ryan, relax, man. No one, obviously except me, is going to remember this weekend 5 minutes from now. But
here
I like
we
bringing
are,
it up every now
and talking about it now.
8 years later, still chatting about Ryan Hunter Ray's terrible Detroit in 2014. Poor guy.
Let's have RHR on. I haven't talked to him in a while.
That would be fun.
Definitely do that. We can definitely do that.
All right. Let's text him. Let's get him next week.
So
that'd be fun.
I had an interesting fan interaction. We didn't quite get to this. In Detroit. So it was early Sunday morning. I was in like pajamas taking my dogs out to go to the bathroom. And a fan was in the bus lot, which I don't love, but I get it, I guess. I mean, that's supposed to be kind of our safe zone.
Yeah,
right?
No, it's way too open at that track and most tracks, to be fair. But that one is exceptionally bad.
So he kind of comes up to me and asks for a picture. I was like, yeah, sure. About with that level of enthusiasm, I'll be honest. And then he wanted me to sign something. Fine. And so he was like, okay, good luck today. I was like, thanks. And he said, love the podcast. I was like, oh, right on. Thank you. And I'm kind of walking about to get in my bus. And he is now 20 steps away, 30 steps away, like probably two buses away. And yells back, except for the Ask Alex part, or except for your advice on Ask Alex. And I yell back, then stop f-ing listening. And open the door, walk in with my dogs, and close it. Like, were you trying to be funny 30 seconds later? Question number one. Number two, why? Like, what?
It was a
compliment and then just insult people.
It's one of those walking away. It's like, oh, I had a good joke. I should have said that. And just try to, like, make it work still. I don't know. But I think that's a great segment into this.
Segue, Ask Alex. A really long Ask Alex.
Well, we do have one, I believe. You said, Tim, you found one. So I'm anxious to hear what we've got because I feel like we didn't do it last week or maybe even the week before. But
all right. You know what? This one's not going to be anonymous because he references something that was on Twitter, so it's fine. So there was a little bit of a back and forth with you, James, and this guy about weddings on Twitter, Justin Holmes, where he said he was getting married, I think, around Portland. And you joked about, oh, you know, you need to get Newgarden. He's the most fun at a thing. And I said, oh, well, I'm coming for sure. So he emailed us. Huge problem.
You don't want Tim.
Tim took it upon himself to invite himself to my wedding because he saw there was an open bar. Realistically, we all know Tim or any members of the IndyCar paddock won't be coming. I want to take it aside here. I'm absolutely
fucking coming.
Yeah, if you give him the time and place, yeah. there's a very good chance he shows up.
All right, back to his thing. If any did, who would be the best guest and who would be the worst? Also, how much alcohol should we have for the open bar? Roughly 50 people.
Okay, so let's do that. Well, okay. Alex, I think, has opinions on the first part.
Honestly, should we get James, the sensical honestly, James, out of the way first no, and then since, let Alex
no,
finish it?
No, since you've had the conversation with him, this I'm going to defer this question of ask Alex to ask James.
Well, okay, well, hang on. Okay, we can do this one together. So I'm for the how much drinks for an open bar situation. I mean, you're looking at you got to plan 3 to 4 per person because there's some people that only have so some people that only have 2, some people will have like 6. So it kind of averages out. But the
Tim
problem
will have
is
12. See,
I was going to go the other way. I think you need to plan the amount of alcohol for 4 people per person. So you got 50 people planned for 200.
But the challenge is, what are they drinking? So you need to have like enough of that of each, like beer, wine, liquor, because you don't know what people are going to go for.
No,
well, I feel like most weddings have like the signature cocktails and then the alternative is beer or wine, right? Like there's the his and the hers cocktail. Yeah. Your wedding did that, right, James?
Yeah. I think we also had other stuff though, if you wanted it, but we did have signature cocktails.
It was funny. At James's wedding, I had to convince the bartender to give me shots for the bride. She was we're not doing shots. And it was like, yeah. No, you are.
It's for the bride. Yeah.
For the bride. And then I think Becky got one. I don't know.
I know
I'm sure she didn't need it. So it doesn't really matter. So yeah, I mean, plan for a 200 person wedding and then your open bar should be good. And here's the best part. Anything you don't drink on the night, you just get to take home and eventually drink yourself. So it's like it's
going to waste. Is this an option? I'm not being funny. It's a serious question. Could you have a wedding where yes. you had your bar and you had your open bar or whatever, but you also were like BYOB, like bring what you want?
There might be rules depending on the venue.
Yeah.
The venue might not allow that.
I remember I did go to one wedding where they just had
someone's house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that venue would be fine.
Well, no, even at houses, it messes with their insurance. I went to a wedding where at a friend of mine's house, and he said for the like event insurance, it was going to be an extra $1,000 if they had anything more than beer and wine, if they had like liquor. So he's like, so we just did beer and wine. I was like, you should have spent that $1,000. That would have been the first $1,000 I would have allocated in the budget.
Paid that $1,000.
Yeah, like had you told me beforehand,
would have given you my card with a check for $1,000 in it, saying thanks for the booze and congrats, I guess. Okay, all right. So that's the technical side. Alex, who's the best IndyCar paddock member to have at a wedding? I kind of already said my piece on Twitter.
I gotta say, I think it's me or Joseph.
Yeah, I think I think you're right up there as well.
I think Joseph's the next level.
Joseph, he pips you because he gets the dance floor started.
Correct.
Like you're not afraid to get up there once it's going, but he is the first man on the dance floor.
You're absolutely right.
And he's the last one off of it. Yeah.
Yes.
And that man, does he sweat.
He sweats a tremendous amount, which is why his shirt normally comes off after the third song.
Yeah. I forgot, Alex, you kind of are a sleeper hit at weddings though. You're a lot of fun at weddings.
Alex shows up in a big way.
Sage's wedding was interesting for me.
Sage's wedding was
I literally had to almost take myself away, put myself to bed for a little bit, and then come back and continue partying.
He like napped and then came back.
Yeah. Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
You guys all made me do that at Marco's, which was the right move.
Yeah, no, that's you're welcome.
I almost stole a Rolls Royce at Marco's wedding.
Anyway, I think Ed did. I'm pretty sure Ed Carpenter stole a Rolls Royce at that wedding.
No,
a very high profile guest threw up in one of those Rolls Royces.
Okay.
How much of that do we have to cut?
None of it.
No. Worst guest. I mean, besides Santino.
I've never been to any event with him ever, and I would like to keep that streak alive.
I don't know.
Are we talking
the IndyCar paddock's usually pretty full of fun people?
Yeah, because, like, I mean, Dixon's a sleeper. He's awesome at weddings. Yeah. Like, he's a
huge as long as Emma's there
at a night out. Emma's also awesome at weddings.
Emma's awesome at anything.
Fair. that is fair.
Twitter.
Nope. Fully disagree. Love her on Twitter.
there's someone that we're forgetting. Like,
well, okay. Do you think Takuma's fun at weddings?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. I've definitely seen Marcus enjoy a couple margaritas. He'd be a good time at a wedding. Yeah, I don't know if we have a lot of
Jimmy gets after it.
Jimmy owns
McLaughlin
a McLaughlin
gets after now. It.
McLaughlin,
all right,
yes.
All right. So, James, you're already married. Alex, no immediate plans in the future, but, you know, who knows? But, all right, hypothetically, if for both of you, if you had to right now make up your five groomsmen, including best men, only from people in the IndyCar, only from IndyCar drivers, who would they be?
Well, I mean, James already got married, and he already had two IndyCar drivers in his wedding.
That's what I'm saying. If you had to redo it right now and there were only...
Me, Marco.
You, Marco, Robbie.
Robbie, sorry. Yes. So that's,
yeah, mine would still James be those three. Yeah, I mean, how many do you get? Like, how big?
I'm just trying to think of fun things. I was saying five.
Five total? Okay, then I'd add in, got to add in, well, does Hunter Ray still count? He still counts.
Yeah.
I think I'd add in Hunter Ray and probably Connor.
There you go.
Making a real party.
So it's interesting. Me. Or sorry, not me. So James, Marco, Connor, Hunter Ray.
Colton's
may have been less fun of a hypothetical than I thought it was going to be.
I would say Colton.
Yeah. We're too close. We're too closely related for this.
Yeah.
All right, let's put it this way. Right. Who would your five party?
Watch.
Right. Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
James. Marco.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
All right, you know what, guys? Let's do it this way. Why don't you reply
on
Twitter?
Yeah.
Reply on Twitter. You can have a wedding party with yourself and is it five groomsmen? Is that what we said?
Yeah, five groomsmen, and you gotta designate who would be the best man.
Interesting.
Okay.
And we'll bring out whoever gets it, we'll talk about it on next week's episode.
Yeah, we'll talk about some of the cool combos. But yeah, we want to see who your five driver, IndyCar driver with best man nominated wedding party would be.
And not gender specific. If you want Janet Guthrie up there, go on, you know.
Oh, so this is like all time, any IndyCar
driver?
Yeah,
let's do all time, any IndyCar driver.
Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Does this change things for you guys? Are you throwing
absolutely
up Mario?
No.
Yeah. I would definitely have Mario up there.
Yeah, Mario's honorable mention.
And let's take into account the most important job of a best man, planning the bachelor party.
Well, cool. I can just tell you, Connor's five would be Thomas Schechter,
PJ Chesson.
PJ Chesson.
AJ Foyt.
Yeah.
No, all right. I'm excited because I want to see people's reasons here. I want to see your four groomsmen and your best man, and I want to hear why. This will be fun.
I like it. This is going to be good. I can't wait to dive into this next week. Road America is going to get very little airtime next week, guys, because I think we're going to have a lot to unpack with this little experiment we're doing.
Any last words?
IndyCar's back on NBC. For those of you that watched on USA, thank you. For those of you that didn't, please watch the next time we're on USA and tell your friends to also watch.
I watched on Peacock on my projector in bed, and I was like, why do I go to races? This is so comfortable. It's noon on a Sunday, and I was in bed watching. It was great. I slept through most of it, but it was great.
That's okay. That's why you go to races, because you miss the races if you're watching them from bed.
Oh, yeah, because I see so much when I'm there.
No, but at least you know something's happening. Terrible.
Honestly, right, Tim, if you don't want to come to another race, threaten us with a good time.
Oh, no, please don't say that.
Oh, my God. Oh, you have to come.
See you, assholes, next week.
Road America this weekend on NBC. I think we're Sunday at 12:30, maybe noon. 12:30 on NBC. Dun, be there or don't, but please do. It'd be great.
Please, please, please come and watch.
Thanks so much for listening to Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. Keep in contact with us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is at AskOffTrack. Or you can follow us individually. We're at Hinchtown and at Alexander Rossi. If you want to follow Thim, though we have no idea why you would, he's at the Tim Durham. We really need to get that changed to add producer Thim. The music you heard today is by Ryan Dan of Holland Patton Public Library. Off Track with Hinch and Rossi is produced by Tim Durham. And by that I mean Thim.
Treat dad to the good stuff at Nordstrom Rack and save big. Father's Day is Sunday, June 16th, and Nordstrom Rack's got gifts dad will love, up to 60% off. Shirts, activewear, watches, cologne, denim, and more. Find amazing deals on Tommy Bahama, Cole Haan, Original Penguin, and Vince. Great brands, great prices. So get to your Nordstrom Rack store now and make dad's day with gifts up to 60% off.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.